We lost you a little bit then.
Oh, what did I get to? Was I stroking my own ego again?
Welcome to episode 10 of the Run of Play podcast, a fresh take on football with no filter, no censor, and no suits. Alongside Abby, Elliot, Cameron, and myself, Liam, is former Wales international and current Barry Town winger, David Cotterill. We'll be talking to David, who also played for Bristol, Birmingham and Swansea, about his public battle with mental health and the work his foundation is doing to help raise awareness for addiction and mental health issues. Hope you enjoy.
David, thank you so much for joining us this evening. So we're on episode 10 now, and we're so glad to be able to have you on the show and not only talk about you and your fantastic career, but also the work you're doing alongside that with your foundation, especially with everything that this year has thrown all of us. And we're now in November, we're back into another lockdown. With that looming, and everyone who's listening to this, can you give us an insight into the work your foundation is doing and how people can get involved and help out?
Yeah, so I set up my foundation around a year or so ago, and my main objective was is to help just normal working class people where they can afford to see counsellors, they can afford for, you know, one-on-one treatment, if you like. So I set up these Mental Health Anonymous meetings. So we would just have like a safe environment of a coffee shop where we go talk and listen and share how we were feeling throughout the day. And they were having huge, you know, positive steps on people. And then we also had, you know, PT sessions that were going on as well, so we can create a healthy body health with our foundation. We like to try and help the local community, which I've started off in Cardiff. Do we try and support as much as we can? But from away from that, I've got these online self-help courses, which I set up with a psychotherapist called the Crystal Matrix. So from people who can't get out at the moment to see, you know, counselors or psychotherapists one-on-one face-to-face, we have these online self-help courses, which you can, you know, effectively do from at home and just get a routine. And you can always go and look back on what you've written about yourself. There's hypnotherapy sessions on there. There's goal settings, there's inner child, there's trauma, there's anxiety, depression, all these sort of things you can help. And it's not just aimed at adults, it's actually aimed at children as well, to be kind of proactive rather than reactive. Because I think a lot of what we do in this in the country is that we're always reacting to things rather than being proactive with stuff, and then that's when we get in a little bit of bother.
Absolutely. And you know, we've seen more and more high profile footballers come forward and share their experiences with mental health and addiction as well. Just how important is that this continues to be normalized, and you know, people feel that they can talk about these issues and seek the help they need?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think a lot of big high profile players, not just in, you know, footballers, but athletes, are actually talking about their problems and issues a lot more. I don't get fooled by a lot of what these organizations are doing. On the outside, they look like they're doing a lot of work, but on the inside, they're actually not. I think they're doing a lot of tick box exercises. And I think there are a lot of athletes that are still struggling who don't get the support that they need. You know, on social media, you know, certain organizations and football clubs and athletes and stuff, etc., might say that they're doing things, but it's actually not the support that they really need. I think there's a long way to go. I think only recently you see that young guy at Man City who took his own life, and that's obviously very traumatic. So it's kind of like, you know, even if you're not going to be a professional footballer, what are you going to do for that young child, that young kid, to give him the best support? Because not everyone's going to make it as an athlete, not everyone's going to make it as a footballer, but you need to make sure that you give them the best start in life. And if you're not giving them the support that they need, then there's a problem.
Definitely. One thing I just wanted to ask, obviously, over the course of your career, have you sort of like what that change has been like and how you've seen that change, obviously when you started out as a teenager, and then, you know, sort of compared to now, sort of watching the conversation change and sort of people's attitudes and understanding and just overall awareness of mental health, has that been something for you that's been really good to see over, you know, over the course of that, just how the sort of the direction things are moving and how that's happening now?
Yeah, I think maybe the younger managers that are coming through who are more in touch with the mental side of things as well, they're very in touch with that, and they want to be the best support for the players. I think, the older generation managers is kind of, they have the mentality, it's kind of like just get on with things and that's it. I think I can't really imagine many of my managers really that I would go up to and speak to and feel like I had the right support if I was struggling mentally. I think they would just take away from me playing or earning the contract, when ultimately that was my release, where I felt free. It's the only time I felt free is when I was playing on a Saturday or a Tuesday. So when that was taken away from me, that's when I really, really struggled.
I think we touched on it in a previous podcast where we were talking about like support for youth development, and I think you touched on it slightly there, especially with regards to the stuff you were talking about with your foundation and helping children. And we asked at the time, like, do we think that the EFL and the Premier League should be doing more to support youngsters outside of football? What's your kind of view on that? Do you think that enough goes on from the responsibility of the clubs and also the organisations, or do you think there should be more?
Yeah, I think there needs to be a whole lot more. I think there's not enough support at all. I think, I have a lot of footballers who retire and they contact me for support and where they should go, when you have organisations like the PFA who should be at the front of that. And a lot of people, a lot of football players don't even know what the PFA do. And that's a problem in itself, because they're an organisation who's supposed to be put in place to protect the players. And so if you don't have players knowing what they're doing, then clearly the communication has not been great right throughout their career, and not enough's been done on that side of things. Again, the same with the racism thing. Only recently now we've started to put a stand on that, but this has been going on for years. Again, this should have been proactive before, and it's been going on for many, many years where players have had to deal with this. And again, more needs to be done on that side, not just a tick box exercise. I think Les Ferdinand was great in what he said a few weeks ago, where he said, right, at what point do you continue to do this? Because it's about action. A lot of people say a lot of things without doing anything. It's the same thing with mental health. I think a lot of these organizations keep saying that they're supporting these players or they're doing this and doing that, but how long do they keep it up for? It's not too long.
Definitely. I always see on the media about like PFA meetings and players going to PFA meetings and stuff, but I never really understand like how that kind of comes to life. What was your kind of interaction with the PFA? And it sounds like it's this club that you go to this building or something, but like, how does that come about in physicality?
Well, the PFA reps used to actually come to the football clubs and we'd spend 10, 15 minutes. And don't get me wrong, I've met people in the PFA who are very, very good. And there's very good guys there who want to actually take the next step in taking it forward with better ideas, more relevant ideas. Because I feel that there's a lot of dinosaurs in that organization where they're really like living in the past and nothing's actually progressing. It's all old ideas and it's nothing about how you can help the younger generation coming through and et cetera, et cetera. So I think there are great people there, but there's a lot of dinosaurs, as I mentioned just then. And I think when the PFA reps used to come into the club, the players didn't want to sit there, because when we used to set it up, we used to set it up after training. No one wants to stay and just watch a screen or a slideshow. We all want to go home. And it's kind of, we read the slideshow. It's like, right, anyone questions about the referees, the new bookings or whatever the laws coming out with the referees? Everyone says no. And it's a no on that. It's as quick as the answers you get on mental health and racism. So it's very quick meetings. Whereas I feel that more needs to be spent on it. And maybe if it's in a classroom or educating the younger generation coming through, then that's the way forward, in my opinion. I think to educate a lot more.
We touched on obviously the difficult year that we've all had, and people feeling more and more isolated, as you said at the start about what your foundation's doing of meeting up with coffee shops and PTs, and obviously that's, I guess, not been possible at the moment. Firstly, what have you been up to during lockdown to be able to sort of facilitate those meetings between people? But also, what advice could you give to people who at this moment in time might be struggling, and might, want to reach out?
Yeah, I just think, well, talking from my own experience, I think that when I've been in a dark place and I've wanted to take my own life on a few occasions and so on, there's always a way out. I feel that routine is key. So when I feel like I'm going off track, I always need to get back on routine straight away, because otherwise I can be on a downward spiral. So that's what, there's always help out there. And for me, when I first spoke about my mental health, it was kind of like a weight lifted off my shoulders. I felt so much better. And it's kind of like, right, I didn't have anything to hide anymore. And I felt quite similar with my addiction with alcoholism as well. When I first admitted that I was powerless over something, or I wasn't mentally right, so to speak. I when I reached out for help, it was just the best thing for me. I think it's quite crazy, really, when we ask, you know, someone, or can you get me in touch with someone to get me a new job, or can you ask me to do this and do that? We ask for help, but when it comes to ourselves, we always leave ourselves trailing and behind. So it's a huge stigma surrounding that. So, you know, we shouldn't have a problem with asking for advice off people or speaking to someone.
One thing I just wanted to touch on there is, obviously, you talk about, you know, Cam mentioned the work that you do with players, and obviously one thing that I think is slowly starting to change, but it's still definitely there, is this notion from fans and people who aren't in professional football, where there's always sort of been this stigma of like, how can you have mental health problems? You're a professional footballer. You know, you've got the life, you've got the money, blah, blah, blah. And is there, obviously, a lot of the work you do with players, but is there sort of a message that you are trying and that you sort of like want to get across to fans as well, to sort of understand? I mean, seeing Michael Keane recently come out, I saw Van der Veel the other day, said something about, you know, he's been suffering from panic attacks and anxiety. And do you think there needs to be a wider conversation there as well about, you know, like, we know everyone sort of loves football, but there's certain areas where it's bigger than that, and it's not about that.
I know. I think a lot of people are really surprised that, you know, footballers and athletes are actually human beings. I think they get quite surprised by that. I think they think we're robots, but I think, you know, they do have feelings. They do feel a certain way. And I always think with footballers, I don't know why, but I think it's maybe because we're so close to actually, you know, a lot of footballers are from council estates, and we're so in touch with actual football fans because we were once, you know, on a council estate, etc., and we go and watch football and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if you look at when it comes to footballers, it's kind of like, well, he's on that amount of money, so he shouldn't feel a certain way. It's even when we went into lockdown, it's kind of like all of a sudden it was the footballer's fault. Footballers had to give everything out, and his COVID was footballer's fault at one stage. Yeah. But then you had the MPs and all these sort of kind of try and dictate, but they weren't putting their hands in their back pockets to help someone. So it's kind of like instantly the footballers are straight the target. Whereas, you know, when you look at Robin Williams, for example, he's one of the funniest guys ever to be on the planet, and he had way more money than most footballers. But when we look on when we look at his memories and what he's about, it's like, how sad is it that he took his own life and we didn't know what he was dealing with? Whereas when it comes to a footballer, it's like, well, he's on £100,000 a week. Why should he feel that way? So yeah, I don't understand why it goes that way.
Yeah,
it's the narrative around like a tortured creative, you know, like, and everyone's kind of open to that conversation around like expecting the funny man to be kind of dark in some way and have those feelings. But everyone, I think the thing is that everyone has their own struggle, and that's the thing that I've noticed, especially during lockdown, about myself and other people that I talk to as well. Like, everyone has their own worst problem, and everyone is human, no matter what personality type they are. They might be really outgoing, they might be really introverted, but they all have their own problems, and it's okay to talk about them. And it does, like you said, it lifts you to just have a 5-minute conversation, which is what lockdown has prevented in many ways, is being able to turn to like even a colleague at work and like chat in the kitchen whilst making a cup of tea type thing. And yeah, I think that's just the biggest thing that I've noticed over this period.
I think like even that, yeah, so say what you touched on there is like the whole footballer idea as well. And everyone loves footballers for being, like you said, being like a working class lad or whatever. I remember seeing something a couple of weeks ago. It was like, football players are just football fans who are also really good at football. And it's like, it's that idea where it's that, you know, I think there is definitely that because football players are so close to normality in every other way. The one sort of separation sometimes is the you know, the fame or the fortune or whatever. And I think it's just recognizing that doesn't mean anything when it comes to the fact that they share, you know, all the other similarities with you that far outweigh that, just, you know, that one difference.
Yeah, I think also as well in this country we have a huge downside of us where we like people to fail. We build them up and then we can't wait for them to come crashing down, which is a huge problem. I think, you know, with the media side of things, it's a shambles, really, how they're allowed to just be able to do that. But that's just the way it is. I think more needs to be done on that side. But I think from that point there, when I first spoke about my mental health and it was all over in the newspapers and the media, I didn't really expect it to go off like that. I just thought, well, I'm retiring anyway, so I'm going to just speak about it. I've had enough of this game. I've had enough of the politic bollocks in this industry. I'm out of here. So I kind of like left on that side of things where I wasn't really fearing any backlash, because I just thought, well, I've hit rock bottom, I'm soon to go and check into rehab as well, because I'm literally in a pickle. So I didn't really care. And people used to say to me, well, I didn't realize you were suffering with mental health. And I used to think, well, yeah, because I used to put a different mask on to let you see what I was doing. And then, but behind closed doors, I'm not in a good place. And I think when we get in touch with that, we, you know, a lot, as you say, I think a lot of people go through these problems and all different levels, just because you're, you know, I don't know, a postman or you're an athlete or whatever, it doesn't make you immune from all these feelings you have.
I think one of the biggest things is that people, you know, look at footballers and sometimes they forget that they're humans as well, because, you know, you even see from like going to games and the way people shout and what you say on Twitter and things like that, you know, kind of forget sometimes these are human beings, you know, they have feelings, they go through the same struggles that regular people go through. They are still regular people. They just get paid a lot of money to do their job. And it's something that's quite interesting what Elliot said earlier about lockdown, you know, just being able to go into work and have that kind of informal chat with someone that you work with, because I found being at home during lockdown, working from home was a very big struggle for me, being in a very sociable office. So it must be similar, you know, and I can imagine that probably many footballers were also affected during lockdown. Obviously, they were at home with their families, but missing that social aspect of going to training, the banter, the camaraderie of it. I mean, surely that must have taken a toll on them as well at some point.
Yeah, I think so, because I think that's why a lot of footballers struggle as well when they retire, is because you're getting so, a footballer's in a routine from a very early age, you know, probably from the age of 10. Even younger nowadays. So it's very, very difficult, because they're told what to do, what to eat. They've told everything, what they expected from them. So from that aspect, I you know, it's very regimental with their structure of life and their routine. So for that to get taken away from them, it is very difficult. Again, I asked the question, and I see on Sky Sports, and I see all these other things that were going on of what we're trying to keep the players fit. We're doing yoga, we're doing this. Okay, well, what are you doing from the mental side of things? Because you've taken away all that, but you're just going to keep them fit. You need to keep them mentally right as well. But we always forget the mental side of things. I wouldn't say that's from every club, because I can't speak for every club, because I'm sure there's some amazing clubs out there doing great work, but I'm saying probably the majority are not doing enough from the mental side of things, because mainly it's about how you're winning matches, how you're performing, to make sure that your team is getting in certain competitions to make a certain amount of money, rather than looking after them as individuals.
I was going to just say one positive thing I think about lockdown and just potentially the whole COVID situation is the fact that everyone is talking far more about mental health and people are much more open and aware of what it is. People have been affected who were never affected before. So if you can take one positive out of the whole corona COVID situation, I mean, it has to be that there is more awareness and understanding of mental health.
Yeah, I think yeah, you are right. I think a lot more people are talking about it. But again, what are companies and people doing? Because I've spoken to very, very big companies over the last couple of months since lockdown. You're talking some of the biggest companies in the UK, and their mental health support is being completely slashed for their members and staff. So it's kind of like, right, we're aware of it, but we're not going to help you. So I think it comes from both sides. Yes, people are being more aware of it, but that's coming from probably us as individuals, people speaking about it more on social media, but not in workplaces, where I don't feel that, you know, put it this way. I think I did a poll the other week on my Instagram, and I said, you know, workplaces, how much support, you're getting support for mental health or you're not? And 85% said they weren't. And that's a huge, huge number.
You touched on, you know, football clubs looking at winning competitions. They want to get the best out of their players. I think we all know that mental health and mentality of players is so important to that. Do you think that's sort of one of the next things that we'll see clubs sort of undertake, which is, you know, whether it's mental health coaches, psychologists, more so on that side? I think there are still some clubs that have that at their disposal, but do you think that's going to become commonplace to have players have, especially at the elite level, to have sort of mental health specialists within the club to help them deal with the struggles of a long season, especially in times like these?
Yeah, I think that's where we need to go. I think it should be compulsory. I think just like having a physiotherapist in the club, I think you should have someone who's there for you, psychologist, not just to help you perform on the pitch, but to help you, you know, cope with the demands off the pitch as well.
And I think we've as Abby mentioned there, we've definitely seen a change in the stigma surrounding mental health. As an elite footballer, have you seen more people in the game come forward without fear of judgment?
Probably still mixed. I think I have a lot of people approach me, and you know, where I touch on mental health on my Instagram, and I like to do a little live Q&A for people to be in touch with, obviously them as players and as people. It's still very much the same. I don't think, you know, people are very forthcoming in terms of wanting to speak about it on Instagram because they're still afraid of how they might be judged. So I haven't seen a great shift in that, to be honest.
Do you think that will come with more people talking about it and more people coming forward like yourself that we'll see then? And obviously, you know, in general media as well, once we're talking about it, that people will just, it will become normal place to say, you know, like I've done my hamstring, or like I've done, you know, I've got an issue here. They'll come forward and say, you know, I have an issue with this, or my mental health suffering because of this. And then actually, well, once that happens, we'll be in a nicer place as a country and as a society, but also within football, we'll actually see better quality of players as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely. I think with more people that are speaking about it, the more that come forward and be more open. There's definitely been a shift in emotion where players are talking about it a lot more. Definitely compared to even when, you know, I retired two years or so ago, not anyone spoke about mental health to do with in the change rooms that I was involved in. Whereas now, you know, I find a lot more younger players or older players come to speak to me about how they're feeling, whereas if I probably wouldn't have spoke about myself, they wouldn't have approached me. So that is good that they feel that they can come and speak to me, etc. And things are progressing. I just feel that there's a hell of a lot more things to do, and there's more organisations, especially, you know, PFA, the FA, all the other organisations out there that need to do a lot more.
That must feel amazing, though. I mean, just to be kind of almost like trailblazing in that sense that people are managing to contact you. You must feel incredible about that.
I think it's, you know, that they know I can speak from experience. I think, especially with the footballers, I can give them advice, because I feel that sometimes, well, for me personally, I would, when I spoke to, you know, a counsellor or anything like that towards my, I didn't really take it seriously, just because I felt that from a counsellor's point of view, it's easy for you to tell how to be, but you're not playing in front of 40, 50,000 people. So how can someone who doesn't play in front of these amounts of people with that pressure then give me advice about how I'm going to perform, so I can really engage or have a serious conversation with them, or actually find a connection, just because I felt like, you know, who are you to give me that advice when you've never been in my shoes?
I was actually going to ask that something similar in relation to, do you remember when the England, I can't remember if it was a World Cup team or something, and it was reported in the media that there was going to be like a psychologist that went along. And I was going to say, I wonder how they kind of reacted to that, because the media was like, oh, this is ridiculous. Why do they need a psychologist to like help them get through a penalty shootout? And I feel like maybe like what Cameron was touching on there, just like maybe nowadays that would be a bit less ridiculed.
Yeah, I think, look, there are guys who do, like even when I went to the Euros of Wales, we did have a guy who came with us, and again, he was more preparing on the pitch, and he was an amazing guy. He was very, very good in what he does. I just feel, again, from that side of things, it's like off the pitch as well. So it's kind of having both. And we're, like, you're talking about England, who's a massive national team. They should be able to afford both. So it's not an issue for them to get the cost yeah, sorted out. Yeah. So, and they probably have both, because I think from obviously looking from the outside, I feel that Southgate is very in touch with his players mentally. As well as physically, so I think he's very forward thinking in what he's doing. So I wouldn't, you know, he's probably got both, and they are progressing. They're doing great things there. So I think that more clubs all over the country need to do that, not just at the Premier League level as well, all through, you know, the lower levels.
Definitely. I think one thing I wanted to ask, obviously you talking there about the Euros, and obviously when you went away for 2016, we've spoken a lot about mental health. Obviously, mental health, you know, can also be when you're having the time of your life as well. And I think one thing I just wanted to ask is how was that tournament for you in terms of being a part of that, and, you know, just that sort of like unprecedented success that Wales experienced? What was that like, being a part of that group that seemed so close from the outside as well?
Yeah, we are very, very close. I think most of us, you know, come together through the under 21 squad and progress into the first team. I think when we first come onto the scene, all the older senior players were looking at saying, well, we've got a team full of kids now, but we're eventually going to progress into something great just because we are so close and we have very talented players who are obviously on the right path in their careers. And it was amazing being involved in the Euros. That's something that I always wanted to do, to represent my country, go to a major tournament. It helped me because every time we were winning a game, we were just having literally shitloads of beers delivered to our change rooms. I thought, and I just thought, right, with my addiction, I think I can get pissed now. So I was happy.
I think I remember seeing a video. It was when, I think it was once you guys realised that you topped the group after England had, because we drew, didn't we? Who did we draw with? Was it Slovakia?
Was it Iceland? Was it Iceland or something? I think it was Iceland.
But well, we definitely went out to them. But I can't remember who that last group game was. Just, and then you finished top of the group and went down that different route against Northern Ireland, and then obviously the Belgium game as well. But yeah, what was that like, that game against Belgium? Because I remember seeing, I had a bet on that game, whereas we did like sweepstakes, whatever, and whoever's teams went out first, they'd have to shave their heads. And I had Belgium, and I thought, oh, well, Belgium will beat Wales, that'll be fine. And then like, switched to Robson Kanu doing that like an hour and a half later. But yeah, how was that night?
I think I must have lost the bet as well, that's why I've shaved my head. But I think, yeah, it was amazing. I think the thing as well with Hull as well is because we were all so close, there was a group of us who were extremely close, and he was in our kind of like, you know, on our tables, you all have your little tables, you get together with your friends, and to see one of your mates then do that in such circumstances, it was like, I felt like a proud dad at one stage, even though he's not far off my age. But you just want your mates to do well, especially when you want to try and achieve something so great together. I think it was just amazing experience to be involved, and obviously having one of your mates then go on and score a great goal. And everyone didn't back us against Belgium, because Belgium, obviously, they got an amazing squad. They were one of the best teams in the world at that time. We played, you know, extremely well. See, when they, I can't remember if they took the lead first or it was just, you know, ran against us, but we showed how close we are and a very good team as well. I think a lot of people would probably doubt us, and we were all about, you know, having Gareth Bale on the team, but I think we were a lot more than that as well. We did have a lot of good players, especially down the spine of the team, that were, you know, performing at a very high level.
We almost tried not to live vicariously through what, like, we it was a great story, but like, as Englishmen, it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, they're showing us.
Do you know what, with that as well, when Iceland beat them, we actually did one of the clapping celebrations at the end, and one of the players filmed it, and it got leaked on social media, so it didn't go down well.
One
who had like the interviews then, it was kind of like they were all England were hating on us, but it is what it is. Do you know what, I just find that it's quite crazy, really, the rivalry with England and Wales. Like, you look on social media, when Wales went into lockdown for 3 weeks, the English were like, what a bunch of idiots, blah, blah, blah. And then the other day I seen someone like, well, England's now into lockdown, and Wales are laughing even more because it's longer. So
finding rivalries wherever we can at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all we've got to do right now with that board.
Yeah.
you mentioned Gareth Bale there. We wanted to ask about sort of the best players you've played with, and obviously the success that Bale's gone on to have in his career, and now back at Spurs. Would you say he's the best you've played with, or is there another name in there?
I don't have another name, but with the news, I don't know if it's one. But I think when I first got into the team, Ryan Giggs was always my hero growing up. I always wanted to be number 11 when I was playing, and I looked up to him. Obviously, being a Man United fan and Welsh, you know, Giggs was my hero. But I think getting to the squad with him, I thought he was amazing. But I think Bale is a better player for me, for sure. He's the best player I've played with.
I think there's a big love of Bale between the four of us. All being,
yeah, ignore that shirt behind me.
Yeah, I just think in terms of what everything that he can do at that one period, well, not, I wouldn't say one period of time, because he was doing it for many years, but when he was gliding past, you know, Mike on at the San Siro, then he was I remember we played one game for Wales, he literally knocked it past someone, gave a guy about 5 yards head start, then run off the pitch and still smoked him, and then went and scored. So he was literally a machine. I think even training as well, is that he just looks so easy for him, and looked like he had all the time in the world, even though you'd still be playing tight possession games. So that's, yeah, he's the best player by far.
Was being a footballer all you ever wanted to do? Because, I mean, obviously it's most, you know, young boys' dreams to be a footballer. Was that what you had your heart set on from day one?
Yeah, I think from the last time I can remember is even from like a young age of maybe 6, 7 years of age, I always had a football at my feet. And probably at the age, probably around about 11 or 12 years of age, it was the time I probably thought, yeah, I'm going to make it. Practice, picked up by Bristol City at the age of 10. And then I had big teams looking at me, like Man United want to sign me, but Bristol City rejected me. And I already had a pro contract in place at the age of 14. So then when that was progressing and so on, I knew that I was going to make it.
Yeah, brilliant. So you mentioned Bristol City there. How much of that kind of experience did that kind of set the foundations for your career in football, and how much did you learn from all of
that? I think, you know, I learned a great deal there. It was a great club and amazing coaches, and I think as a club they try and do things the right way in the sense of the way they put up, especially when I was there as a young age, they tried to do things the right way. It was a good club, and I can't thank them enough, really, from the coaching staff and everything that I eventually went on to do. I made my debut when I was 16. So they literally formed for me to make it a professional footballer. Again, you know, any club, ultimately the club needs to give you the chance, but it comes down to the player as well, because they need to work extremely hard to get into the first team.
For each guest we have on, we have a quick fire round, which we like to call Against the Run of Play, which I believe this week Elliot has produced some music to go over the top. So just imagine there's some really tense music going over my voice right now. We've definitely raised the production level. Now we're on episode 10. So all you have to do, answer the first question that comes to your mind, and we'll start nice and easy for you. So Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi.
Nike or Adidas?
Nike all day long.
Like that. Lampard or Gerrard?
Gerrard.
40-yard screamer or tiki-taka team goal?
Screamer.
This is going to sound so great with the music.
Suit manager or tracksuit manager? Turn out in a tux, or you're going to be in your Nike all tracksuit.
I do like managers in a suit, to be fair.
Yeah. There's something classy about it, isn't there?
Yeah.
And finally,
not the manager who played. It was not the manager who played against Man United the other week, because his suit was horrific. I don't know what he's going for.
Oh, the Leipzig.
Yeah, Nagelsmann.
He's ruined that question for us.
That's the equivalent of turning up to like a five-a-side in like bright pink boots and getting smashed 8-0.
Yeah, he didn't know what day it was.
No, you just couldn't do it.
He went for it. He wanted to be memorable. Yeah. He wanted you to know.
We'll add him as an option for the next. For the next one. And finally, a World Cup win or a Champions League win?
Actually, win the whole competition.
Win the whole Champions League, or win.
If you could lift one trophy.
Yeah. Oh, World Cup.
Yeah, thought so. Nice. Thought so. Well, that's all we have on. I'm in my head, the music's still going. It's not obviously here, but like, thank you so much for joining us, David, and also hopefully we'll have you back on the show soon. But it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, and thanks for
having me.
Thank you for being so candid
and
sharing your experiences. It's really, yeah. I hope that people listening can kind of take that. And I suppose if there is anyone who does want to contact you, how would they do that?
Probably the best thing is thecrystalmatrix.com. I think we have online courses. It's not courses in like you need to do in a certain amount of time. It's just self-help that you go through day in, day out. There's loads of things. And if you have children who are suffering as well, there's support on there for them as well. So that's probably the best bet.
Fantastic.
Amazing.
Thanks so much, David. Have a good rest of the evening.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot. Care. Thank you.
So
have a nice night. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
thanks for listening to episode 10 of the Run of Play podcast. It was great to chat to David about all of his experiences in his career and his incredible work with the foundation, raising awareness for both mental health and addiction issues. As we touched on in the show, if you're experiencing any struggles at the moment with your mental health during this really, really difficult time, please do reach out and talk to someone, be it with your friends, your family, or even a professional. And also take the time to kind of check in on your mates. You'll feel so much better for doing it. Please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and drop us a rating. It's really appreciated. You can also follow us on @runofplaypod on Twitter and Instagram for more content. Run of Play will be back very soon with another expert guest, so stay tuned.